This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. So when you think of foods of the South, you're starting to think of biscuits and fried chicken and big pots of greens. But five chefs with roots in India are changing ideas about what Southern food looks and smells like. Foods like black-eyed peas, okra, and sweet potatoes aren't just staples of the South. They are plentiful in Indian kitchens thousands of miles away. These celebrated chefs with Indian roots come together Sunday in Raleigh for Brown in the South. It's a dinner series that asks what it means to be Indian in the Deep South. Mirwan Irani is CEO and co-founder and executive chef for Chai Pani Restaurant Group in Asheville and Decatur, Georgia, one of the founders of Brown in the South, and joins us from Blue Ridge Public Radio. Welcome back, Mirwan.
Good to be here. Thanks, Frank.
Chef Vish Bhatt has become celebrated for his garam masala home fries and okra chaat. He's made Oxford, Mississippi his home, where he's head chef at the upscale eatery Snack Bar and another Brown in the South co-founder. Vish, welcome.
Great to be with you.
Mirwan, talk about what it means to be Brown in the South and how this whole thing came about.
Well, it started with a conversation Vish and I had about at what point do we start thinking of ourselves as Southerners that happen to be of Indian origin versus Indians that happen to be of Southern origin? And it was a question that I hadn't asked myself before, and Vish and I had a very interesting conversation about that. And we realized there was a whole bunch of other people like us, especially immigrants, especially Indians, that tend to come to the South and still somehow manage to feel apart. And not necessarily because the South isn't our home and hasn't accepted us, it's maybe because we haven't accepted the idea of being Southerner. So that's how the conversation started, and being chefs and doing what we do, we decided to make a dinner series out of it.
Vish, talk about that. When that idea came up in that conversation, how did you feel? Did it surprise you to think that anyone would question your Southerness, or was it the other way around?
No, I mean, I've always thought of myself as Southern. I mean, you know, I have settled here. I live in Mississippi. This is home. And so the idea that I am Southern, you know, wasn't something that was new to me. It's you know, when I say that to people, sometimes they don't agree with me, but that's not as frequent as it used to be. And then in Mirwan, I found somebody who, you know, was a kindred spirit, and, you know, we had this conversation, and hopefully we continue this conversation and make people feel like they belong. And of course, the responsibility is ours as well to get out and tell people that we're here and we belong.
Mirwan, take us back to that first Brown in the South dinner. What was that like?
Well, we try to imagine that if we thought of ourselves as Southerners of Indian origin and we were cooking in the American South, what would be the most quintessential Southern thing we could do? So the theme of the dinner was, we called it Desi Diner. Desi is a colloquial term for Indians, you know, from the homeland. And we imagined, what if five Indian chefs opened a diner, what would that dinner look like? So we had dishes like Kerala fried chicken, Indian-style shrimp and grits, or Malabar shrimp and grits. Vish made this amazing pork meatloaf with achari spices. And the idea wasn't to sort of do this fusion thing of saying, oh, well, we're taking Indian food and Southern food and sort of mashing them together. The idea was that if we truly accepted being in the South and the culinary traditions of the South and wanted to cook with Southern ingredients, but bring our background to it, what would it look like? And that's what the dinner was, that's how it started.
We're talking about Brown in the South, a collaborative dinner series exploring identity and belonging, featuring chefs of Indian descent who've made the American South their home. The latest installment of the series will be held this Sunday at Garland Restaurant and King's in Raleigh. Both are co-owned by Chidi Kumar, who has earned a place at the table in Brown at the South for her, Brown in the South, I should say, for her Indian-inflected menu. Welcome back, Chidi. Good to have you here.
Nice to be back.
Talk about how did you get involved in all this?
Well, I got a text message from Vish, and I think it took me about 12 seconds to respond, and he quickly summarized the idea, and it just was, it was a great idea to me, and just seemed like a whole lot of fun.
What's your sense of sort of how this works? Because you heard Mirwan say it, this is not just a kind of an idea about fusion, this really is sort of about identity and how you bring yourself to the food that you grew up with, perhaps, and the food that you now find yourself. How do you see yourself fitting in that way?
Well, I think all of us maybe are inspired to cook in the South because the ingredients here are so familiar to us, and they're the agricultural way of cooking here reminds us of the way that we grew up eating and the way our mothers used to shop. And the pot of greens that you mentioned earlier is something that, you know, we all kind of have experience and childhood memories of. So I think, you know, we had that natural inclination, but there's a certain isolation that you feel when you're an immigrant, and also when you're a chef and you're running your restaurant, you just don't really look up very much. And lo and behold, here's a whole lot of us that are having having the same thoughts and feelings.
Well, Miron, how much of this is for the chefs themselves to say, hey, I'm not alone here? And how much about it, how much of this is really getting the word out?
That's a great question. As this has evolved, I've found that it's been much more introspective for me, and I think for the chefs here, of why is it that some of us hesitate to be sort of proclaim ourselves as Southerners? What is it about the history of this region, the complicated history of this region, that makes me hesitate? Whereas when I lived in California, I wouldn't have hesitated to say I'm Californian. Mm-hmm. And I realized it wasn't so much that the South hasn't accepted us or that the South hasn't evolved. Maybe it's me that hasn't quite accepted that I am a Southerner, and how does that change how I feel about myself, how I cook, how I relate to my daughter who's growing up in the South? So yeah, to answer your question, is became more introspective, and that was driven by our guests coming and asking us very deep and thoughtful questions about why we're doing this.
Well, what were those barriers for you, do you think, and how have things changed for you as you become more open to the idea that you're a Southerner?
Well, that's the thing. I'm not sure there were barriers. I think they were self-imposed to a certain degree. I mean, the conversation that Vish and I were having was that, look around, there's so many chefs of, you know, immigrant descent all over the South, yet we don't tend to, at least I'm speaking personally for myself, think that there are barriers to being accepted, whereas the reality is our businesses are successful, we're acclaimed, the South has accepted us. So I just felt like part of the conversation is, what does it take not just chefs of Indian origin, but of any immigrant origin that live in the South, to step up and be counted as Southerners. And like Vish said, we may not look like a prototypical Southerner, but maybe that's what the South is turning into slowly.
Well, Vish, these two, Marijuana and Chidi, are members of are part of a state with questionable Southern credentials. There are moments that you've got to wonder. But you, down there in Oxford, Mississippi, deep South, that is it. How did you make Oxford, Mississippi your home?
Well, I arrived, like most people do, to Oxford to go to graduate school, to attend Ole Miss, and I'm still here. I started cooking for some beer money and realized that that's what I really enjoyed doing, and started doing more of it. And,
drinking beer, you mean?
Yes.
So you did more of that.
That's really why we're all here.
That's why. That's a big part of it. So, but you stayed, and what's interesting is the owner of your chain of restaurants has become a mentor to you, and someone who we know up here as once having been a chef at Crook's Corner, right?
Absolutely, and so which is another reason why I think of myself as a Southern chef, because you know I have a direct line to Crook's Corner, and you know there isn't a Southern restaurant that's more Southern than that, and so if you come from that family tree, then you know you should claim.
Yeah, that's your lineage, man. Yeah. That is your home. That's you know, and shrimp and curry grits. I mean, why not? Well, in fact, you did that with Hush Puppies. Talk about your Hush Puppies and how you know sort of did a variation on the theme and how you came up with that idea.
So I mean, Hush Puppies to me, the first time I saw them, they reminded me of pakoras. I mean, it's the same. You have a fritter that's fried, and so. The idea was if you take Hush Puppies, which is cornmeal and corn and onions, what if you added spices like my mother would to pakoras? What if you added some toasted cumin and some black pepper and some green chilies? What happens? And so I tried it, and I obviously liked it, but when it went out to the tables, people enjoyed it too. It was something that looked very familiar, but once they bit into it, there was this whole new experience.
Of course, Chidi, that can be the problem in some ways. If it looks familiar and this is going to be fried chicken and it tastes like, you know, curried fried chicken, I'm like, that's not what I was expecting.
Well, I think, you know, the backdrop of where you're sitting and what kind of menu you're ordering off of really does make a difference. And I think people were really actually ready for it. And, probably fried chicken has evolved over, you know, the last few hundred years here anyway. So that's one thing people don't really think about very much is the evolution of Southern food. It's not a stagnant thing that's, you know, remained the same for 400 years. It in itself has evolved. So this is, to me, a natural continuum of that.
No, it's a fascinating thing about the African influences and then how they were inflected through the Caribbean and then they come here and the various influences that may. Well, and the other thing is the ingredients. You talked about that. Chidi, I want to stick with you for a minute. And because when I was in southern India, I saw this okra growing that was the size of a table leg. And as you know, once okra gets to be even half of that size, it is a table leg.
Right.
Not there. They were called, the translation was drumsticks.
Drumstick, yeah.
Drumstick. And it was great. But this, I think, points to the similarity in ingredients. I mean, food's food, and it pretty much shows up everywhere around the globe, right?
That's true. I mean, it traveled. I'm not sure exactly, and I should, what the actual home of okra is, but it's certainly probably not the South.
Right.
It was definitely brought over, and maybe it came from West Africa and went to India and then also came to the U.S. And, you know, the shifts in history and what was traded from where is the reason we have tea on our table and collards on our plate.
We're pretty sure that it came from Ethiopia, at least here. Now,
right.
It may have been growing simultaneously in other parts of the world, but North America probably didn't know it until it got to us by way of Ethiopia.
True, and I think some of the same ships were going to from India to West Africa to the Caribbean and the U.S.
I still want to know how drumstick gets that big and doesn't turn into a table leg, but that's...
I think it's probably a different variety.
It's a different variety.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
Just like those big radishes can be just as good. You know, baby radishes are good too, but it's just a different variety.
I like the watermelon jobs. Well, anyway, we'll talk more about that in a minute. Marwan, talk about what you have learned because you've had a number of these. Talk about the, I think you've had, what, three or four by now of these dinners?
Yeah, this is our third dinner.
Third
Am I right,
this
guys?
Is our third, huh?
This is our third dinner.
How have they evolved, and what have you learned?
Yeah, so how they've evolved is the crowds are bigger. They sell out faster. And the conversation is getting more personal, I believe. For the first time, in the first two dinners, we realized that there was, besides our diners wanting to come and eat the food, there was definitely a thirst for wanting to have a conversation. And it's very hard in a dinner format to have a conversation when you've got food going out and the chefs are busy in the kitchen. But as much as we could, we try to have that conversation, and much of it would happen after the dinner in a public forum, a radio show such as this or newspaper articles. But for this particular one, we're actually saving time to have a panel, a discussion panel before the dinner, in response to people saying they want to hear more, ask more questions. And so that's evolved. And then the second part that's evolved is the how many more people are sort of coming up out of the woodwork, so to speak, to want to be involved in the dinner. Chefs of, you know, immigrant origin from all over the world are saying this is a wonderful way to have a conversation about this piece of it. And we are talking about the American South. I don't think the issues would be the same if we were in some other part of the country. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to keep it local in that sense. But the dinner is being so well received that we're being asked to come and do it at other places so we can continue the conversation there.
Vish, how has has this conversation changed your ideas about some of these questions or perhaps amplified some of your ideas? I wonder what kind of change has taken place over the course of these dinners for you, Vish.
I mean, what's been really good is to know that there are a lot of other people asking the same questions that we are asking. And that's really good to know. It's also good to know that if people weren't asking those questions, once they come and see our food or eat our food, they start asking those questions. They start acknowledging that, yes, you know, you guys are here and you belong. We can also sort of look around us and look at other immigrants who have been here, especially in Mississippi. For me, you know, I people don't think about this very often, but I do. We have a really nice Lebanese community that lives in the Mississippi Delta. They've been here for 120 years, and things like kibbeh and lamb stew have become a part of the Mississippi food lexicon. We don't even think about it as being Middle Eastern food, and yet it is. And so that's the idea for me, is what we do needs to become part of this fabric, part of this patchwork. And that's the conversation I think we are having, and that's the conversation that's spreading as we do these dinners and as we talk to people.
And we should point out that the dinner this Sunday at Garland and King's in Raleigh, Chidi, is sold out. So that we can't, no more tickets for that.
Oh, it's pretty sold out.
I thought it was. But if it's not, then we won't.
Oh, no,
say
it's very sold out.
It's very sold out. Okay, got it. It's a matter of degrees. Who are some of the other chefs who are part of this collective, Chidi?
So this time we have a little bit of a different format. So it's maybe we're going to talk about that later, but it's not a sit-down dinner. It's a food festival, and we're celebrating Holi, which was yesterday, I believe, or Wednesday, the start of spring. And that's usually like a really boisterous outdoor kind of throw color. And, you know, everybody drinks some bong glassies in the afternoon and dances around. So we wanted to have a bit more of a party theme. And with King's and Garland in itself is not that big, but between the two, we could invite more people and have a bit more face-to-face time with our guests. So there's 10 chefs. It's the three of us who are here. Asha Gomez from Atlanta, Manit Chauhan, who's now in Nashville, Vimala from Curry Blossom in Chapel Hill, Nick Singh from Viceroy here in Durham, Sunny from Richmond, Virginia, and then our two guests, Sam Four from Lexington, Kentucky, has a Sri Lankan pop-up business called Tuk Tuk, and Farhan is he was on MasterChef with Gordon Ramsay, and he's in dental school, but is this very gifted chef who is originally from Atlanta. And the last two joined us on the last dinner. So with every dinner, we try to, you know, broaden our circle a little bit.
What's on the menu?
Well,
you don't even know yet.
We do. There's 10 dishes. Wow. It's going to be sort of like bites. Again, kind of an informal, more of an informal situation.
A party situation as well. Marwan, any ideas about expanding this to other groups who may have immigrated recently or less recently to this part of the country?
I would say absolutely. I mean, I think it was easiest for us to start with what we were familiar with and the people that we were close with and talk about Indian chefs. But absolutely, there's room for this to grow. But again, it's based on, you know, if that's a conversation another community wants to have, and I would love for that community to have that conversation. You know, does being a Southerner look Lebanese? Does it look Korean? Does it look Indian? Does it look Vietnamese? And I would say the answer is yes. My daughter moved to the American South when she's 2 years old. She's 16. She looks like me, but she's a Southerner. And at the end of the day, if she's comfortable saying to when she meets somebody from some other part of the country that she is Southern too, then I think these dinners are doing their job. And I'd love to see that happen with every community. And if I don't get a chance to throw this in there, I do want to mention that the dinner is a benefit also. Mm-hmm. And the proceeds go to the Southern Foodways Alliance, which is doing a remarkable job also down in Oxford, Mississippi, telling culinary stories of the South and how the food in the South is evolving. That's where the original conversation with Vish and I happened, was at that symposium. So we felt it was fitting that symposium would be the benefit of these dinners.
Well, and it's interesting because we can have so many conversations around that. We can have, as our starting point, the many ways in which food influences us. It's has memories, it has cultural importance, but it also changes. So if you want to talk about the way everything changes and things aren't bounded by borders the way some would like to think they are, it's a good way to start. So a lot of good conversations not about food can get started, it seems to me, Marwan, right in the kitchen.
Absolutely. I mean, for as long as we've been humans, we've always gathered around food and the table. And much of, I think, the evolution, growth, and spread of civilization throughout the world has been primarily around food. It is the common theme that brings us all together. You talked about the familiar being having unfamiliarity in terms of flavor. Well, the reverse is true. You could walk in a restaurant like Chai Pani or Garland, where it may look unfamiliar, but when you look at the ingredients that are going into it, there's a familiarity there too. We cook with green tomatoes, we cook with okra, we cook with collards, we cook with, you know, things that are familiar to the South. Vish has this great metaphor for the American South with sweet tea. when you think of the South, there's no thing more Southern than sweet tea, yet both ingredients came from some other part of the
there
world.
There you go. Marijuana Rani, CEO and co-founder and executive chef at Chaipani Restaurant Group in Asheville and Decatur, Georgia. Vish Bhatt, executive chef at Snack Bar in Oxford, Mississippi. Chidi Kumar is head chef and co-owner of Garland in Raleigh. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brown in the South sold out ticketed event this Sunday at Garland and Kings in Raleigh. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Coming up, the music of the Ernest Turner Trio. Stay tuned.